Many of you are surely wondering why I have summoned you at this hour.
It's time for the big interview!
All right, boys, prepare to be dazzled.
That's right, it's big. It's the big names, the big news, the biggest stories. It's the next big thing. What's the big deal? It's the big interview.
What's going on here? This is big news. We need coverage of this.
Money Life brings you the big thinkers, the top experts, the brightest minds. With the big interview, you can stay informed about all the financial matters that are important to you, all in one big package.
Oh, boy. Got a package this big. I've always wanted to have a huge package.
Did my taxes pay for this?
The big interview. Sit down, strap yourself in, and get ready to learn.
Your mind is beginning to work. It's entirely due to my influence, of course. You mustn't take any credit.
Well, today we're going to make sure that your mind is working around the most important concepts in investing, because my guest is a legend. Jack Bogle, the founder of the Vanguard Group, president of the Bogle Financial Markets Research Center. You can get more information about all at Vanguard.com. But also, you should follow his blog. It is one of the must reads. And it's not just his blog. It updates with appearances that he makes, with articles that he writes, all that. It's johncbogle.com/WordPress. It is linked up at the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. You know, Jack, I should probably ask, are you on Twitter? I've never checked.
I don't tweet. One of those other funny little things we see at the bottom of all the articles in the press, Chuck. I'm a little bit of a Luddite.
Jack, I would not say that. As a guy who answers his email, that's all I actually expect from folks who are as busy as you are. It never occurred to me to ask. And yeah, 140 characters in you, I can't imagine that's a good mix.
That'd be a tough demand on this somewhat verbal guy.
Now, we had a great talk on yesterday's show. I want to go in a slightly different direction now. Obviously, as the founder of the Vanguard Group, the guy who everybody points to and says, here it is, the pillar of index investing. You have also, more or less since your time at Vanguard, since you left day-to-day operations, watched as the mutual fund industry has morphed and changed. And we've had the development and the mainstreaming of exchange-traded funds. And we're now at a spot where ETFs are all made, as the folks behind it like to say, granular, where you can have an index for anything and everything. Does it change in any way the concept and what folks do? We talked about your portfolio and you keep it extremely simple. Yet I'm being hit up every day with press releases for try this index ETF and it's the Bulgaria ETF, or try this one and it's an index of nanotech companies that is not really a passive index. It's fairly actively managed. Is the concept changing, or the way people apply it changing? Is there anything that you see that really alarms you with that?
Well, yes, there is. The ETF is a perfectly good idea for trading. It's an index fund. It is index funds, by and large, overwhelmingly. And the first ETF, exchange-traded fund, is the State Street SPDR, and it is a haven for institutional speculators. It turns over at something like 7,000% a year. Every day it's the most widely traded stock in the world. And ETFs generally have very, very high trading volumes, up in the hundreds or thousands of a percent. And 7,000% is by no means the highest turnover ETF. And you can imagine what this guy, who thinks 5% turnover is a little on the high side, thinks about 7,000 or 10,000%. It just makes no sense. It's costly. It cannot be done successfully. State the obvious, can't be done successfully by everybody because they all come back to being average. The problem with ETFs is it turns out to be a great marketing idea, certainly the greatest marketing idea of the early part of the 21st century. But it doesn't look like it's a very good investment idea. Yes, to be very clear about this, we don't care down here whether you buy the S&P 500 at Vanguard regular index funds or the Vanguard ETF. Total 500 stock ETF, and that's true of the other funds too, where we have two classes. They both own the exact same portfolio. One of them can buy it in a way they can trade it every day. One of them buys it to hold for the long term. Why anybody would want to trade every day, Chuck, is beyond my comprehension. The original slip ad for the SPDR was, now you can trade the S&P 500 index all day long in real time. To which I say, what kind of a nut would want to do that? So I'm going to guess in the ETF business, number one, for the broad market ETFs, which there's nothing the matter with if you buy them and hold them, the total bond market, the total stock market, the emerging markets, the international market, S&P 500 certainly, they're fine if you don't trade them. But then why do you buy the ETF? You know, maybe that temptation to trade will hurt you, because the trading in ETFs has been very, very sloppy. They get way off value periodically in kind of a market crisis. I've done it two or three times now. And as long as you don't act on that trading thing and don't see this big drop and get out, the trading shouldn't bother you. It doesn't hurt the fund, doesn't hurt you, but it hurts those that are doing business on the sell side when it's going way down. And it helps those that are buying the shares from those who are being hurt. This is the inevitability of the market, Chuck. Every buyer has a seller. Wow. Mm-hmm. And every seller a buyer. Wow, again. So I think it's gone much too far. It is not the first hot idea that has gone too far. I don't like triple leverage. I don't like guessing whether the market's going up and levering it, or guessing, on the other hand, whether it's going down and levering it. I don't like funds that claim to be able to beat the market because they do a different way of indexing. You know, they may work for a while, they may not, but in the long run, all my chips are on owning the total stock market with the usual guarantee, and that is if you own the stock market, you will be guaranteed, A, your fair share of the market returns if you do it at low cost, and B, you'll be guaranteed to do better than your neighbors, because the active managers, the active investors, own the entire stock market index, the entire stock market itself, but they just own it individually and bet against each other. That makes no sense to me. No mathematical sense, no logical sense. So we've got to get out of this mentality of trading, betting we're smarter than the other guy, where in the long run we're all average before cost and below average after cost.
Do you believe that there's a shakeout coming, that because of the evolution, and as you said, you think it's gone too far, that there's going to be some measure of backlash? Or is it just going to be, net, you know, whatever doesn't sell today, they're going to wind up folding out, and tomorrow somebody will roll out the next new product and it'll just keep happening, and ignore it, folks, stick with the index?
Well, you know, that's really a great question, because the problem is investor behavior, and the ETF and its narrow specialization in its wild forms of speculation and leverage appeals to the worst instincts of investors. They basically turn long-term investors into short-term speculators. So we have a shakeout. It's a shakeout among people who have done badly because they bought the wrong things at the wrong time or sold the wrong things at the wrong time. And we know deep down that cannot and does not win. We have the data to show how investors in ETFs do compared to the ETFs themselves. And it's true of the mutual funds generally too. Investors, because of their behavior, get into the funds late and get out early when they go down. So it's a behavioral issue. So I don't see that kind of a shakeout. If there's a market shakeout, you know, another market decline, which there always could be, well, that's going to affect everybody, active funds, index funds, ETFs, pretty much alike. So the investor will finally, I think, get wise. It's like the investor who goes, Chuck, to Las Vegas, and he's got his pockets filled with dollars, and the longer he plays, the more he's guaranteed to leave Vegas with his pockets empty.
So let's talk about the investing playground as it exists today. Is your bigger concern something structural that's happening in the mutual fund and ETF world? Or is it what's happening in the broad economy, et cetera? Should folks be more worried about the top-down picture, or should they be more worried about, here's my funds and what I own?
Well, I think, honestly, in the long run, the bigger worry is the economy. I mean, everybody's going to tell you, don't worry about GDP, don't worry about this or that. But that's the basis on which our corporations make money over the long run. So when people say disregard it, they're basically saying pay attention to the price, don't pay attention to value. And that's a short-term strategy. And ultimately, by definition, because we trade with one another and have a lot of costs, a loser strategy. So you really have to worry about both. And I do worry about the economy. You know, we have a Congress that can't seem to act in any way at all, except they did pass the worst piece of securities legislation in the history of our nation. That's the so-called jobs bill that I think went into effect today and allows people to do crowdfunding for their new ventures without the usual protections that investors have. And there's going to be a lot of fraud. I warn your listeners, Chuck, that there's going to be a lot of fraud out there when you don't have SEC guidance and oversight.
I've been warning them, too. What are the things that you like about the investment world right now?
Well, I like the fact that, first, it's the investors and even in mutual funds seem to be waking up to the realities of indexing. In the last 5 years, I think something like $600 billion has flowed out of actively managed funds, and $400 billion has flowed into index funds. That's a $1 trillion swing in investor preferences. People are getting it, seeing the light. And even someone like Fidelity, whose chairman, Mr. Edward Johnson, said back when we brought up the index funds, he said, our shareholders will never be satisfied with an average return. We don't, in the index fund will amount to nothing. And now he's managing, guess what, $150 billion of index funds.
Yeah, well, of course, that could also be because his investors won't necessarily settle for average returns, and his funds in many cases have been providing below average returns.
Well, yeah, when he said that, actually, when you think about it, back in 75, 76, the market had collapsed in 73, 74, and even the fund he ran, which was called Fidelity Trend Fund, had a catastrophic record, and its sister fund, Fidelity Capital Fund, had a catastrophic record and went out of business finally. So I just got to tell you, Chuck, that I'm happy with my strategy. Own the market. You can't predict the market in the short run, but in the long run, bet on corporate America to continue to be the innovative, productive, efficient, economical way it's been for all those years. Although I have a lot of questions about whether our corporations are being properly run in the interest of shareholders, I think that kernel of corporate life, corporate value, if you will, continues.
And you think that continues regardless of how inept or what have you we describe our politicians as going forward?
Well, you know, it may even be. I mean, the corporations have, and this is a big concern for me as a citizen of the United States of America, and that is these corporations have so much wealth, so much lobbying power, particularly the banking part of the industry of corporate America, that they have the power to influence legislation in a way that favors them. They've been able to escape any personal blame for what went on, but corporations get fined. I think J.P. Morgan is about to get fined, I don't know, $90 million, $1 billion, or some huge number, 900-somethings. I can't even remember the number, but boxcar kind of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, individuals did that. Corporations don't do anything. The great value of a corporation is it can't go to jail. And there's no way we can put a corporation in jail. But I think we should be much tougher on the individuals along the decision-making stream that leads to all these basically fraudulent activities and corner-cutting activities that we've seen go on in banking and in other parts of the world.
I want you to look forward 10 years, because I know that that's at least your time horizon when you talk about it as an investor, and maybe more. And I know it's hard to do for a guy who's in his 80s, but what do you see changing about the investment world? I mean, we've gotten to a part where we've evolved and there's all these new products. Is there something new coming down, or are we going to get to where we are at, say, 2024, the 100th anniversary of the mutual fund, and going, you know, what they made 100 years ago still works for most people. Folks, just do what's simple.
Well, let me just say this, Chuck. The industry of the 1920s and 30s, despite the difficult conditions, was a very different industry than it is today. You know, it all began in Boston, as everybody knows. First three or four funds were Boston-based. They were prudent. They liked the idea of trusteeship. They didn't like the idea of marketing. That was deemed to be a distraction. So they didn't have their own distribution companies. They used an outside distributors. And so they were free to spend all their time on investment management. And while the results were not anything better than they should be, they were probably about average. And that was fine. They were operated very low cost in those days. Even when I got into the business in 1951, the average expense ratio in this industry was about 55 basis points. And now it's double that, despite the huge increase in assets and the huge increase in management fees. So it had a kind of a fiduciary basis. And we have departed from that too much. I talk a lot about this. And the first thing we have to do to bring us back to where we ought to be is have a federal standard of fiduciary duty where our money managers are required to put us first and not themselves and not the big conglomerates that own them. They should not be first, and they are first. So investors are realizing that, hence those capital flows I described. And so investors have to lead the way. But I think we need a federal fiduciary statute, which, interestingly enough, Chuck, is in the 1940 Act.
Mm-hmm.
It says funds must place the interests of their shareholders ahead of the interests of their officers, directors, managers, distributors. It's just isn't observed. The managers come first.
And
that has to change.
Absolutely. And I'm a big proponent of a fiduciary standard as well. And Jack, I'm a big proponent of yours. And unfortunately, we have come to the end of our time. And there's just not enough. I've got more questions. So I hope that I can get you to come back with us in a couple of months.
I'd love to do it, Chuck, anytime. You ask good questions, and I hope my answers are clear. They are opinionated. And let each of your listeners judge for themselves.
Absolutely. And folks in the audience, if you want to get more information, you want more of Jack's words of wisdom, it is johncbogle.com/WordPress. Go check it out. It is distinctly worth the visit. There's much more to go on the September 25th edition of Money Life. Well, actually, there's not that much more to go, but stick around. You don't want to miss any of it. We'll be right back.